I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today, my guest is short story writer Jose Skinner. I don't know if you remember him, but about 10 years ago, maybe even more, his first book came out called Flight, and it got a lot of attention. We've been waiting a long time. Finally, a new collection, The Tombstone Race, which is a collection of stories with Jose Skinner. So stick around, and we're going to ask him about this. As I was reading it, or actually right when I got the book, I couldn't help but think of how sometimes it takes a writer years to come out with another book. And I don't think that writers take so long to come out with the next book because they're not writing. I think they take so long because sometimes you're writing and you're writing and you're writing, and then you work on something else and you write and you write, and then you work on something else, and you know, you just scattered all over the place. And then one day you look at everything you have and you realize, oh wow, I have a book. I think I'm ready to publish this book. And I think that's the best approach. I think it's better than saying, I got to publish a book every 2 years, I got to publish a book every year. And it's that distance from when I'm working on it to when I'm reading it, you know, again, that I think is important for a writer. We need that distance because we are so sometimes absorbed in our own work that we get absorbed in our own egos, and our own egos tell us, you're not good enough, it's bad, it's horrible, it's crappy. And on the other hand, sometimes when we write something, immediately we think it's the most brilliant thing in the world. And then we get distance and we realize it's not the most brilliant thing in the world. And then we give it a little bit more distance and we say, you know, that's not crap. Anyway, I guess maybe all of reality is that way. If we give it distance, we have different perspectives. Anyway, let's talk to Jose Skinner about his new book, The Tombstone Race. Jose Skinner is the author of Flight and Other Stories, a graduate of the Iowa Writers Workshop, and the former director of the MFA program in creative writing at the University of Texas Pan American. He currently lives in Austin, Texas, where he writes books, and this is his latest one, The Tombstone Race. Jose, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thanks a lot, Daniel. It's really, you know, it's really a pleasure to be here.
I haven't seen you since Los Angeles, AWP last year, and it was nice to see you. I was sitting there with my brother, I think Tim Hernandez and Lee Herrick and some others, and you came up. It was really nice to see you. It's all I haven't seen you in years. How have you been?
I've been good. You know, I've been teaching. I stopped teaching at UT Pan American. You know, I kind of regretted leaving, of course, because I do like teaching. But I thought, well, you know, this is maybe my chance to crank out a couple of more books before I, you know, turn up my toes.
You were teaching creative writing. Is that correct?
I was teaching creative writing, literature, translation, numerous things. But yeah, it was the English department. I think it's called the Department of Languages and Literature now.
And were you colleagues with Emmy Perez?
Yeah, Emmy Perez, Jose Rodriguez. He's new. He's newly on tenure track, and he's a great poet and translator. And let's see. Britt Haraway, yeah, a number of people.
Yeah, we just had Emmy on the show for her new book. Tim, my colleague, interviewed her. It's a fantastic book. And I thought you were still there, but I guess you moved on.
I have moved on. I mean, I'm not teaching full-time. Sometimes I get gigs. Mm-hmm. You know, people will call, and they'll have a writer's workshop or a writer's conference, you know, and so I've gone to several of those. And
wow.
Went to Columbia last year, the country of Columbia, with the
nice
Iowa International Writers Workshop with Luis Urrea and some other people, and we did this whole tour there.
Nice.
And things like that, but full time, no, not anymore, no more.
Wow. You know, I have a friend who retired, and he says, I'm going crazy. I don't know what to do with myself. And I'm thinking, let me retire. I can't wait till I retire, because as a writer, I know when I retire, it just means I have more time to work. So you're working a lot.
Yeah. And, you know, I can see what he means. It's kind of a welcome distraction to, you know, even to have, you know,
yeah,
a bunch of, like, papers to grade, and, you know.
You must have been a good teacher.
Well, but even, like, you know, because it's writing up, you know, as you know, it's hard and it requires all the,
yeah,
you know, your concentration, and it's just kind of easier if you can get a distraction and that you can justify as well, this is my real job, you know, better correct all these papers, you know, the students aren't really going to look at the corrections, probably it's going to look at the grade.
Right.
And, but you spend all this time, you know, laboriously, you know,
right,
correcting all the grammar and all that, and you're like, but then it's like, well, beats writing, you know, and so, but anyway, I do like writing sometimes, you know,
right.
It's not the kind of a thing I do with constant pleasure. I mean, maybe some writers do.
Right. But, no, yeah. I don't think I do anything with constant pleasure.
Yeah.
I think, you know, anything can get old, even the face of the one you love.
Yeah.
But in a good way. And, you know, that's interesting that we're spontaneously talking about this, the conversation going in this direction, because one of the things that I first thought when I got your new book in my hand, The Tombstone Race, Stories by Jose Skinner, one of the first things I thought was, finally, Jose Skinner came out with the second book, because your first book, Flight, was an incredible collection of stories that got a lot of attention. I think it was even a Barnes & Noble pick. And so every Barnes & Noble in the country you went into, there was your book. And it got a lot of press, and it was quite successful. But then I hadn't heard from you in terms of, you know, another book until this one. What it kind of evokes for me, what's his name? Juno Diaz. He came out with his book, Drowned. Didn't hear from him for years and years, and then bam, he comes out with another one. Then bam, another one, and bam, another one. So, why did it take so long before we got your second book? And thankfully, we got it, Jose.
Well, it's kind of embarrassing, you know, that long. I thought, man, this is a long, you know, gap. And I would write stories for Mike. You know, I was publishing, you know, two or three stories a year, probably in magazines. And so, you know, it wasn't as though I just totally stopped. But it was, there's, you know, when you teach, and we would have big classes, too big, and it was always a struggle with the administrators to get them, you know, down. You know, I'm talking about creative writing classes and workshops and stuff, you know, with way too many students, and so it was all, you know, so it was a lot of work. And
right.
Yeah, and then I also helped set up a MFA program down there, so there was a lot of administration to do there to kind of set up a whole new program, and just one thing after another. And meanwhile, I was writing, you know, and I've written a novel. I did write a novel in that period. And as a matter of fact, it's so long that, you know, the agent I've been working with, she's like, oh, it's too long, you know. And so I've been trying to see if I want to actually edit that. Or
how many pages is it, and what is it called?
It's called Huevos. Huevos. And it's, yeah. Well, porque el rato tiene. It's kind of a coming of age set in Texas and also in Central America. And I was having fun with it. I usually write short stories, which, as you know, because you're a great short story writer, and that, you know how concise they have to be, and so when I started, and I hadn't really, you know, written a novel before, and so it got to be kind of fun, easier, you know, than a short story, just because it's the same characters, and you know keep going, and so I just kept going on and on, one thing after another, and the agents all like, that's good, you know, but after a while, man, and I'm all like, yeah, that's true. So anyway, I've got to try to see which parts, but I kind of like all of the scenes. So.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting that you say that, because I suspected that might be the case, that you had another book that hasn't been published yet, because, you know, to go back to the Juno Diaz example, or even the Sandra Cisneros example, everybody was waiting for the next book. Everybody's like, you know, and you see, after a while you start losing faith and say, come on, you know, come on. Where's the next book, Sandra? Where's the next book, Juno? And then they come out with one, but then bam, 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 another one and another one, another one. And what that really tells us is that these people have been writing all along. When everybody's complaining about them not publishing again, they're just writing away. And I imagine, in spite of all that, I imagined, now I know for sure, that in spite of all that work that you had to do, that you were still writing. How many pages is this novel?
Well, it's like, the words, I don't know how many pages, but it's like 180,000 words, which apparently, I mean, I should know these things being in this business, but I shouldn't pay attention to it. And, unless you're David Foster Wallace or somebody who just, who they expect such things of, it's apparently like 100,000 words is kind of an upward limit, and they'll consider, but, nearly twice that long.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that's a good sign, because I think that one of the, the aesthetic phenomenon in fiction is when we get so absorbed in the story that we almost forget we're reading. We're just there. We're experiencing it. It sounds like that's what happened to you. And I really believe that if that doesn't happen to the writer, it's not going to happen to the reader. And 180,000 words is really only about 400 pages. It doesn't sound too long. So I hope you stick with it and that we get to see it pretty soon.
Yeah, and of course I have other irons in the fire. I'm working on a memoir of, everybody's got, know that. But I think this will be unique enough to be of interest. It's like, growing up in Mexico and out in Rome, and then coming up here and struggling with, culture shocks and things. And then, and then I'm working on another novel, actually, which is, it's unfortunate to be distracted. I should really be trying to just work with one thing at a time, probably, and try to market that big novel. But now I'm doing another one. I'm thinking, that one. That's done. It's like, but you have to get that. Meanwhile, I'm working on a border novel, which is kind of, I hope it's like a page turner, and I'm trying to do that one really right and just have it done, really engrossing. And so I'll have two and then finish the memoir, and that'll be three, and then I have a bunch of short stories that I can put together in a collection. But you have to think about what fits and sort of the whole. I think the whole unity of a collection.
Absolutely. You don't just say, okay, I got enough stories for a book. Here it goes. No, you put it together. When you put it together, you start to see. The themes, I guess you can say, and sometimes even a narrative arc that that just happens naturally when you put all those stories together. You said something. You said the way you said it. You said I have stories that I can put together, and I'm wondering if it's ever happened to you. You obviously write all the time, and you dip your feet into many different literary rivers, which is, I guess, a way of saying that you'll write on a novel, and then maybe you'll be distracted for a while to write a short story, then distracted a while to write a memoir. Have you ever gone into your computer where you have the list of your documents? And you're surprised that you've written so much, and you think, wow, I think I have a book.
Yeah, exactly. You look at, in fact, even the last book I found in a couple of magazines, I could have put that one in the Tombstone Race, and that would have fit. And so, yeah, there's things in there, and I have an old computer that I can't access. It's so old, and I know I've got stuff on the hard drive there that I. I'll be gone forever, and I'm like, oh. But then most of the stuff I look at, I think, that really sucks.
That happens to me, believe me.
I'm psychologically not in the same place to develop it. I think, it's possible, but man, I can't get back into that.
Yeah, I've been working on a collection of poems now for about 4 years, and it's been finished. I finished the first draft 3 years ago, but I'm not into it. I just can't return to it. So I have to let it sit for a while as I work on other things. Tombstone, the Tombstone Race is a collection of stories put out by University of Arizona Press. It's brand new.
University of New Mexico.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. That's what I meant. Thank you. University of New Mexico Press. It's brand new. So tell us, how long did it take you to write this, and what is this book about?
Well, you know, again, talking about unity, I guess the main unity it has is, the most obvious one, is that it's these are all stories set in New Mexico.
Right.
And
where you used to live.
Where I lived for a long time, yeah, and went to high school there briefly, and worked there, worked in the courts as a translator, an interpreter, I mean, and mostly in criminal courts. And so I got some of the story ideas from that experience. Mm-hmm. So in the book, there is quite a bit, I think, about... prison, you know, stories about prison,
right.
Stories about people in trouble and with the law and that kind of thing. So that probably derives from my experience in the courts.
Yeah, yeah. You were an interpreter.
Yeah, I was an interpreter, mostly in criminal court, but yeah, all over, federal court, state court.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first story, you have a character named Osvaldo, and he thinks his teacher is making a pass at him, and that kind of unwanted sexual attention causes him to plunge into a river and really be pulled away. And I'm wondering, I love that that's the first story, because the second story is about a young woman named Jennifer, who also is in this one, definitely not perceived, a victim of sexual aggression. So immediately you're kind of getting your reader prepared that this is a book. This isn't just arbitrary stories, that this is a book. But I'm wondering about that metaphor of Osvaldo going down the river, Moses-like, and washing up on shore. Is that kind of... did you place that as the first story because it somehow opens up thematically what is going to happen in this collection?
Yeah, I think it does touch on a lot of the themes in the collection. You know, a young person in trouble, I think that recurs. Although the last story, come to think of, somebody pointed out, and it's interesting, the first story is, a couple of stories are young people, but then it ends, towards the end, you get a middle-aged guy looking for a job, a teaching job, and then at the very end, you get, like, quite an elderly painter, you know.
Right.
So, but that was unconscious. I thought, oh, yeah, I guess that's true. So, a lot of the... I thought that was a fairly strong story to begin with.
Yeah, definitely.
So, again, you have to think about the placement of the stories. I mean, I was reading just today a interview with Joy Williams, who's got a new book out. She's a short story writer I've admired over the years, and she has a list of things that short stories should have, and one of them was anagogical, and I was like, what is this? She said that it should be, let's see what she says here. She said that it has to be, there should be an anagogical element to it, and I'm like, what's that? So I look it up, and it refers to a climb or ascent upwards. So it's, you know, the Bible so at the end I thought, man, but I don't write religious stories. Overtly, but then at the end, I guess it's true that he goes down. There's a lot of like falling, and because the disappeared friend has fallen presumably into the chasm, and then at the end you see the main Osvaldo, he rises, and so I'm like, well, I guess that's
right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure she was evoking Flannery O'Connor from Mystery and Manners, who says that a writer must be able to see things anagogically and essentially everything, every image that appears in our works is going to have multiple levels of meaning. And one of those levels, of course, will be spiritual or archetypal or religious, or, you know, however you want to, you know, depending on, you know, on where you are. So, that image of him going down the river definitely allows for a lot of multiple realities. You can see it, you know. But what makes your fiction good, and quite frankly, I think what makes fiction good is that it has that level where you can say, "Oh yeah, this kind of is an archetype for the beginning of, you know, this epic story." You know, like in the case of Moses going down the river in a basket and being picked up by the Pharaoh's wife. You know, it does evoke that, but yet it's still just stories. But I'm wondering, what other images in this book really kind of strike you as, yeah, I'm going somewhere subtextual there, and I got to put it in, even if I don't know what the meaning is?
Yeah, good question.
You know, people, when they say good questions, it usually means, that's a really stupid question. Why did you ask that? Sorry, is that a stupid question?
You're asking, well, there's things that later, in retrospect, you look at, you know, if you're asking, like, what themes, like... Ask it again.
Okay, you know, let's just cut out that whole anagogical stuff, and he just said that, and we'll just go to the next question. There seems to be a lot of themes of, a lot of the times a theme of violence comes up. Why do you suppose that's such an important part of these stories? How are they connected?
Violence. Well, when I was an interpreter in the courts, of course, you know, you get in touch with a lot of violence, and you know, and so you see, and you see a lot of it. Not to give up an unjust or twisted perspective on New Mexico specifically, you know, maybe people might say, "Well, that, you know, that's a lot of violence. Is New Mexico a violent place?" Well, it's, you know, in terms of, in world terms, no, but in U.S. terms, oh, I suppose it probably is up there. And in any case, violence, and that's strange because I don't really like violent books myself. You know, like when they go on and on, I won't, you know, I get even Cormac McCarthy, or whose style I admire, but it's too much. I don't want, or movies that are just, so I'm not really into it.
Yeah, but your violence isn't like that, you know. Which it's a suggestion of violence, like the story with Jennifer, for example. You know, she gets raped on a date, but you don't go into the violence in such a way that we have to turn our head, because we don't actually see anything happen.
Yeah.
So you handle it very well, and I agree with you. I can't read Bolaño's 2666.
Oh, no.
It's just halfway through, I says I just can't do this. No, there's more gentleness and more. I don't know, there's more love in your work, because I guess that kind of really makes me, or brings me to the next question. You have Jennifer, you have Osvaldo, you have the professor, or the student whose research is stolen by Cholos. You have these wonderful characters, and I just feel like there's a lot of compassion that you have for your characters. Is that the case, and is that necessary for the writer to have that kind of compassion?
I guess it's not necessary. I mean, I'm sure there's very entertaining books that, you know, maybe even, well, I don't want to, you know, start talking about authors that may or may not have compassion. But, you know, it's an element, and I'm not really thinking, oh, I got to write a really compassionate, you know, I got to write. If it comes out, it just comes out in the telling of the story, you know.
Right.
But sure, I do, you know, I think clearly, you know, we're all here just by chance. And, you know, like Heideggerian Dasein, here we are, Dasein. And what's the point of not being compassionate? You know, it's like we're all in the same boat.
Right, right.
And so let's have compassion for our situation.
Right, right.
you know, or it's not a long thing. This is our chance to be, you know, to see, to exist, and why, you know, cheapen it with, or why, you know, fight, why not have a larger view of, yeah, the situation?
You know? And, you know, and I think that if you have well-rounded characters, like this, I would say, is character-based fiction. What's really important about these stories are the characters, the people. We come to care about them. And I would think that when you have well-rounded characters, it really, you know, no matter who somebody is, we need to be able to understand and sympathize and connect with them. And that's incredibly successful in this book. These characters they're our neighbors.
Yeah.
We know these people. Let me ask you something. At what point in the process of writing this collection did you begin to say, okay, this is what the book is about? And in that process, did you have to get rid of stories because they didn't fit? And then on the opposite end of that, did you have to write stories because they would fit in order to make a complete manuscript?
No, actually, I didn't. Neither one of those. I just had a bunch of stories that I'd written and published here and there without any view to a collection, and then I just, you know, chose the ones that would fit,
right,
in that collection. You know, I have a friend, Seth Horton, who's the editor of the South. It's called New Stories from the Southwest.
Uh-huh.
And the collection that there's going to be another anthology coming out in 2017 from the University of New Mexico Press. And he was the one that told me, hey, you know, they do fiction, you know, you might contact them. And I guess that's when I got the idea about, you know, stories. And I thought, well, what would be a unifying thing? I said, well, I could send them all, you know, New Mexico stories, since it is the University of New Mexico.
Yeah. And, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, and so that was probably the first. And then I have others that are more like metafictional, more that didn't quite work in that group. And so,
and so
I didn't, you know, and also I have some unfinished ones that still need to be, that if how I finished them, I could have included it, but you can't just, you know, dawdle forever.
Yeah. Well, it's a great book, and I'm really glad you came out with another one. I look forward to your novel, and I look forward to your memoir. And if I could ask a little bit about that memoir that you're working on, that's something I've always wanted to ask you. And you know, I consider you a friend. So when I see you, you know, we sit down for a little while and talk. We haven't hung out much, but you know, we're still young enough to have the opportunity to do so. But yeah. I've always wanted to ask you, and I wonder if this appears in your memoir, how did a Mexican get the name Skinner? Is it Skinner?
Yeah.
how did that happen?
Exactly. Well, it's all coming out in the memoir. It's a complicated story. But, my dad was determined he's a Skinner, but he was determined to, you know, naturalize us as Mexicans. When I have other brothers and sisters born in different places, Puerto Rico, Argentina. I have a sister who was born in Mexico, and she's considered a citizen by there. But he had the rest of us. When we moved to Mexico, he had that sort of had to try to, you know, naturalize us and get papers. And so I do have, I do have this. We are inmigrantes, Mexican inmigrantes, and I went to school there. I went to college there, and everything. So. I guess, you know, so I'm kind of like Chicano al revés, no?
Right.
Like the opposite thing is kind of unusual, like, to go in the other direction. But that's what happened to my dad, because he was adventurous, and he was, you know, he wanted to do something different. So, or he just, well, actually what he wanted to do is, you know, make a fortune down there, you know, and, you know. Kaiga King Kaiga, no, it's like just, you know, exploit whoever wanted to. I know that's not bad, but whoever, you know. In any case, he got into different businesses there. Some, you know, different shades, different degrees of shadiness and stuff. And then he went to other countries in the Caribbean. But anyway, that'll all come out in the memoir.
Well, I look forward to reading it. And I know you have a web page, and that is joseskinner.com?
Yes.
And can people go to that web page to find out where you're going to be reading? Because I assume that you're going to be doing a lot of readings on this from this book because it's brand new and you got to get it out there. So can they go to joseskinner.com and see where you're going to be reading and get in contact with you and everything?
Yeah, definitely. And come on down to the Texas Book Festival. It's a lot of fun. I'll be reading there. That's in early November. And here and there, I did some appearances in the summer, and so hopefully I'll do a few more.
Okay. Well, good. And so we'll have them look at your webpage again. It's joseskinner.com. And the name of the book is The Tombstone Race Stories. And congratulations on this book. It's a fantastic read, and I hope people pick it up.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for the interview.
Okay.
And as always, I always look forward to your writing, too. You know, Hotel Juarez was the last one I read, and that was awesome. And, of course, Chicano Chicanery I still got it somewhere here. Anyway.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying so. And I hope to see you around in the writer circles. Jose Skinner, thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. It's a pleasure.
I'd like to thank my guest, Jose Skinner. The name of the book is The Tombstone Race, and it's a collection of stories that take place in New Mexico. Check it out. I'd also like to thank my producer, Norma Martinez. So thank you, Norma. And thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire. See you next week.